Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. And your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories. On Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Pep.
People have their opinion.
What other falsehoods are out there?
A lot of the perception things about us.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
Rebuilds are difficult. Sometimes it takes years and years. I still believe, given a really good offseason with this draft pick that we have coming and with our ability to get some veteran players in here alongside these young guys, we can make a substantial leap.
Kick back, relax. Locked On Bulls starts now.
My job is to prepare the child for the road, not the road for the child. And these guys are men.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls _ Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369, the place to do that. Drop your texts, your voicemails. We've been getting a lot this weekend from the two games we saw on Friday and Saturday. So if you have a thought you want to get on our latest edition of the Mailbag episode this week, hit us up at 331-979-1369. Happy Monday to you, Matt. That was one hell of a weekend, right? In the most bizarre and strange way.
What up, Jordan? What up, Bulls Nation? Glad to be back on the mics with you, man. It was very, very much so a crazy weekend for the Bulls and their fan base. Obviously, another disappointing loss to Miami. I was not at all surprised. We've seen that the team have slow starts before, just like they did, putting themselves in that 15-0 hole. Jim, of course, starting out all this drama by subbing out Zach and only Zach when they were down 13-0 that early timeout. But we saw a big response from Zach, and now there's just all this follow up drama of whether or not people are actually buying into the kiss and make up relationship that exists between this team's head coach and the guy who's supposed to be carrying them right now.
All right, I guess let's start there then. Let's start with the Miami game on Friday, and then we'll kind of work our way to whatever the hell that was in Charlotte. First 5 minutes of that game was just the most atrocious basketball I've ever seen in my entire life. That goes for all five starters on the floor, not just Zach LaVine. But I guess I found it very interesting from Jim Boylan to start that he said he saw three egregious defensive mistakes by LaVine in the 3.5 minutes and thought he needed a seat. I did a podcast by myself on Saturday, and I talked a little bit about this going back and watching those 3 minutes. And I found up a couple other little smaller offensive mistakes, but I really, really found one like unbelievable. Can't believe he missed that. Coverage. Left a wide open three for Kendrick Nunn, and that was actually when he got pulled. But anything else, too, I thought was nitpicking. Did you find it a little bit weird that Boylan called him out for three defensive mistakes when the team as a whole just played like garbage for the first 4.5, 5 minutes?
Yeah, and I mean, and to Zach's credit, that's what he said after the game. He's like, was it Zach LaVine who gave up a 13-0 run to start the game, or was it all five starters out there? And I thought that was a completely valid point for him to make, and I don't know if you've seen it, but B-Ball Breakdown on YouTube, who does really great work, took a look at this, a closer look at the start of that Miami game and what Jim Boylan thought he saw with those specific three mistakes. And as you mentioned, one of them was not getting to Nunn, leaving him open on the three. On that one, it's because Zach actually had to cover for Lowry's guy because Lowry was not back on defense yet, and Zach was trying to prevent giving up an easy layup at the rim. So that was one. I definitely recommend going and watching that that B-Ball Breakdown clip. I'll tweet it out today in case you haven't seen it. It's very well done. But there are defensive mistakes all over this team, and I think it is in large part because the system that Jim Boylan is forcing his team to use is not right. It's not working. This over-aggressive defense on their pick and rolls and attacking and double teams. You saw Coby White making a bunch of head-scratching decisions in this breakdown of their defense in games against Charlotte and against Miami. And it's not just Zach. Like, is it true that he has not lived up to the talk about improving his defensive game and people, you know, being sick of people talking shit about his defense? Yeah, he's basically the same player on defense that we've always seen, but it is a team defensive flaw, and it's not just on Zach. So I'm glad he stuck up for himself.
Yeah, me too. I'm 100% with you, and I love the fact that the response was what happened in Charlotte. But I found two smaller offensive mistakes, like right off the bat, that I think just coupled with the fact that the Bulls couldn't find a bucket for the first 4 minutes. And that's why, in all combination, Jim Boylan felt like he needed to make a statement of some kind. I don't know if it necessarily is a good idea to do that to your star player. The question I was asking our listeners, Matt, was, does a guy like Jimmy Butler get pulled out of a game if he starts off with that kind of start LaVine had? Does LeBron get pulled? Does anybody else that's a borderline to bona fide superstar in this league to all-star get pulled from a game where they make a couple of mistakes in the first 3.5 minutes? The answer is unequivocally no. No. And Jim Boylan went ahead and did that to his one-star player on this team, or the one that we're supposed to be building around. I don't know. It just sent the wrong message to me, as if showing up Zach LaVine was going to spark something underneath him to get him going. And maybe you could say that in the short term for Charlotte, but I just don't see that plan of action working for Boylan. And all it does for me is realize that there is some type of lack of trust between Boylan and LaVine. And I don't know if it's on both ends or if it's on one or the other, but that's what I got out of him getting pulled in those first 4 minutes.
Yeah. And I mean, if you saw the column from Vinnie Goodwill, you know, who used to cover this team for NBC Sports on the beat, and now is, you know, a more of a national scope writer for Yahoo Sports. He was at this game. He was in the locker room. He circled back to Zach to ask him a few more follow-ups after most of the media buzz had died down in Miami that night. And those quotes from Zach in the Vinnie Goodwill piece are pretty, you know, eye-opening, talking about what you were just mentioning with the trust between player and coach. And it certainly sounded from Zach's quotes that he feels offended in some way that Jim doesn't trust him, and he right now does not trust Jim. And I don't blame him. Does anybody trust Jim Boylan as far as actually the coach helping the team win instead of getting in the way of the team winning? Because right now there's no evidence of that whatsoever. A lot of late fourth quarter collapses, the Bulls' net rating getting worse by quarter by quarter by quarter. Jim can't make proper in-game adjustments. His rotations are a catastrophe and a clusterfuck. And I agree that I don't think benching him is the right choice, the right coaching choice, even if what we saw in Charlotte Saturday night. And I think it goes to a bigger problem of not letting Zach, and also I think this is true for Lauri Markkanen, who's really struggling as well, get into a rhythm. They are starters, and they should be playing more minutes than they are. But Boylan insists on playing a 10-man deep rotation and playing his bench guys 20-plus minutes a night. That's not normal, and it's not smart.
And he decides to, in a lot of fashions, close out with those, you know, two or three guys that are coming off the bench that, let's be honest, if this Bulls team was fully healthy, should have no business closing games out. Ryan Arcidiacono, you've done a really good job.
Ryan Arcidiacono.
And, you know, you actually, in part, won that game for us in Charlotte had you not disrupted that and gotten a steal and Zach hitting that shot. But still, guys like that should not be closing games for you. And the fact, too, that they got away with having Zach and Kobe White on the floor at the same time to close that game out in Charlotte, I'm surprised Charlotte didn't absolutely torch them. So there's a ton of different little mistakes that he's making too. And to me overall, like, I just was looking back at that first quarter, you know, even after Zach LaVine went out of the game, the Heat combined for a 28-0 run in almost seven minutes throughout that first quarter. So it wasn't just on LaVine. I think it just coupled with the fact that they couldn't find a bucket either. And I don't know what the hell they're doing on offense either. Like, in that Heat game, when they couldn't find a bucket, it seemed like every one of these guys took their turn of going isolation and trying to find something. Or if Zach has the ball in his hands, everybody just stands around. I don't understand that. I don't understand how that becomes successful, or guys are going to find open shots all of a sudden, because it just seems like a lot of standing around when Zach has the ball in his hands. And I don't necessarily think that that's his fault. It's like guys just aren't getting open and guys aren't moving. So it's a whole clusterfuck, like you just had said. But the only other thing that from this Miami game, I guess, just to harp on it too much, Lauri Markkanen had a terrible game. He was 3 for 12. He had 9 points, 7 rebounds, 1 assist. He was in minus 11 in the plus minus. And then he came out in Charlotte's on the back-to-back and played awful, too. I don't have any excuses. I don't have any other answers. Can you explain to me, from what you're seeing, what the hell is going on with him?
I mean, I really can't, and it's becoming a much bigger concern. I mean, there are Bulls fans tweeting out during the game, after the game, talking to us on Outsiders, you know, hitting up our text line saying, trade this dude or bench this dude. Or even, I've heard, send this dude to the G League. And this is not Lauri Markkanen. I don't know who this dude is. You know, Kendall Gill was joking the other night, like, you know, he got his talent stolen from, you know, the aliens in Space Jam. It's honestly like it's that glaring of a difference in the players we've seen. Some people are, you know, clapping at me being a Lauri defender, saying, hey, man, like, this is the same dude we've always seen. You know, he's weak, he's soft. If his shot's not falling, whatever, he's not aggressive. And, okay, there are certain elements to these criticisms of Lauri from the people who have never believed in him, and they are more apparent right now because he's struggling so badly. But to me, there is something going on that we don't know. And I think it can be multiple factors as well. I think this, you know, variety is the, you know, the spice of life, multi-ball handler offense that does not actually have a pecking order of who's getting looks, who's getting touches, find Lauri the ball. I think because Lauri can be a passive player and wants to be a team player, he's not getting looks and he's not getting into a rhythm. And that also goes in line with what I was saying earlier about minutes. It's like, dude's not even playing 30 minutes a game. How do you get into a rhythm? How do you get yourself out of a shooting slump if you just, your coach has this ridiculously strict rotation and you can't get into a groove? And the other factor that I think could be there, and I, you know, again, this is just because I want there to be an answer other than Lauri sucks, because I really believe in him. I think he's playing through something. I think he's playing through one or multiple injuries. You know, we heard about the oblique a couple weeks ago and the fact that he had been playing through it. There's a decent chance he's still playing through it. And I also wonder if his back is flaring up, because that might explain just how insanely stiff he looks on the floor. And in Sam Smith's latest column for NBA.com, I saw, it kind of was just a little blip of a mention when he was talking about marketing struggles, but he said there's a chance he's playing through something that he would never admit to us. And I thought that was odd. You know, like, is he trying to play through an injury or injuries because he wants to, you know, be there for his team and his coach, who is so obsessed with, toughness, grit, pride, pure heart? That might explain Lauri playing through an injury that maybe he shouldn't be playing through.
You bring up a couple of really good points, and I think, like you said, I don't think it's just one thing with Lauri, too. Couple the fact that this Bulls team's gotten off to a terrible start, the injuries as well. I'm with you 100%. I think there's something physically wrong with him, and it may not be to the point where he can't go out there on a nightly basis and give it a go. But the whole toughness thing, like that, the mentality of that, going out there and playing through it, it does us no good. It does the Bulls no good. It does them a disservice. It does him a disservice, too, because then he looks like crap, has no answers to explain it, doesn't want to blame it on an injury. I also think, too, there's a lot of pressure on him in this third year. You know, Bulls fans were expecting a lot from him. And, you know, we saw glimpses in those first 2 years of what could be. We were all hoping that that would turn into something consistent with a healthy roster and pieces around him that we're going to make him better. That just hasn't happened. And I don't know if that goes back again to the physical issues that he's having, and he's not able to play the way he normally does. But I think the pressure there, and I also too think that he doesn't feel like he's got somebody in his corner, at least right now, right? The Jim Boylan benchings in the fourth quarter was this clear sign of some tough love. And then seeing everything else around too with this team, you know, I don't think we're making a big enough issue about what's going on with Denzel Valentine, too. Like, the relationship Jim Boylan and Valentine have there is very bizarre, and I don't know. I feel like it's something to do with pressure, having zero confidence, having nobody in his corner, on top of the injuries and the terrible start this Bulls team has gotten off to. And added into to the fact that I would like to go back to see the stats on this, but Otto Porter's impact when he's on the floor with Lauri, and also, too, Robin Lopez's impact that he had last year with Lauri. Him and Lauri played really, really well together, and that's because Robin Lopez is one of the best guys boxing out down low in the entire league. So I wonder if that, all of that has little factors too to it. So, I mean, there could be a million different reasons, but clearly not the guy that we drafted, clearly not the guy that we saw last year, especially late.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fair to point out the absences of Otto and also the departure of Rolo as maybe also being, you know, factors at play here when trying to figure out what's wrong with Lowry. Because we you know, Lowry's awesome month, and it's, you know, the month that we always harken back to when those of us who are Lowry believers say, look what this dude is capable of, coincided with Otto Porter Jr.'s arrival and the Bulls getting a lot much more balance and space in their offense. And of course now, you know, Otto's, you know, on the shelf with his injury. But I also think, again, to me it goes back to the offensive system. And it's like, we saw Zach and Lowry kind of clash at times. I still think that there is an argument that you can make about maybe staggering those two, especially, you know, to help some of these offensively limited defense, you know, lineups that Boylan loves so much, where it's like, you know, part of the night, Saturday night's game, it was like he had no shooters on the floor or one. And, you know, all of his defensive stoppers who can't make a shot to save their lives. And it's like, what are you doing, man? Like, try staggering something. But also, like, you know what worked a lot last season that we just don't see anymore? The Zach and Lowry pick and roll. I mean, it's virtually unguardable if they execute it well. And we saw them execute it well a lot last season. And either can be the primary ball handler, either can be the screen setter, either can pick and pop and shoot from three, and either can drive to the basket. It works, and Jim Boylan has just abandoned it, and I don't know why.
And he hasn't done a whole lot with Carter either, which is surprising, because Carter's the better... Like, Carter can set a better screen than Markkanen can. Markkanen's not very good at setting screens right now, and then couple that with the injury, too. He's really going to fall off of setting those. So I guess I don't understand it either. And it goes back to, again, when the main ball handle has the ball in their hands, and usually it's Zach, a lot of guys just stand around. Like, watch the perimeter. There's two or three guys at all times on this Bulls team that just stand there. They just stand there. They don't move at all. Nobody moves. And I feel like it causes a lot of the stagnation at times. And then when you see the Bulls go on fire, they're moving the ball. They're making the extra pass. Guys are actually moving. And it creates things. And we saw that in Charlotte, especially in the fourth quarter. But I mean, Jesus, 49 points and a career night from Zach LaVine to pull off a 1-point victory against one of the worst teams in the NBA. What does that say about Jim Boylan's team? Like, good for Zach. That was an incredible shot. He had an incredible game. And good for Ryan Arcidiacono, too, for making a steal at the end.
Ryan Arcidiacono.
Again, he probably should have got called for a foul there, but
Kobe White was in on the steal, too. So
yes, Kobe White.
Who also had a monster game off the bench that kind of got glossed over because of Zach's
night. Which is crazy. You're asking a rookie to be your second best scorer on this team right now. Like, what does that say to everybody else on this team that is supposed to be a scorer, is supposed to be a guy that can get us a bucket at a reliably decent clip? None of those guys are stepping up, and we're asking a rookie to basically carry us when Zach can't. And I think that it's unsustainable, and it's going to cause a lot more issues for this team than I think Jim Boylan foresees. But still, I just go back to that. Like, Charlotte, one of the worst teams in the league, and it took everything Zach had in a 1-point victory on a game-winning shot and a steal at the end to win that game. And it's not going to be enough. It's not going to be enough.
And that's not just a one-time instance. Several of the Bulls' wins this season, of the modest number they have, are because of insane individual performances like that. Whether it's Zach or, you know, Kobe White going on his crazy hot shooting streak and the way that he took over that Memphis game, you know, back in October, that's what it has taken. Because, again, to me, yes, there are a lot of players on this team underperforming right now. Missing Otto obviously hurts. But you have a coach obsessed with these try-hard guys, and he's closing games with them, and you're consistently seeing the Bulls lose fourth quarters, give up leads in fourth quarters. And this was almost another one of those. They almost did it against the bad Hornets twice. They had a lead through most of this game, and then the Hornets make a run, bridging the third and fourth quarter. And you're like, here we go, another epic Bulls collapse against a bad team. So much of that to me is on the shoulders of this head coach who cannot close games. Doesn't know how.
How about that ending too? Zach is celebrating with Kobe White. Everybody's jumping up and down celebrating with each other. Boylan tries to join in and nobody even responds to Boylan. And again, that could have just been those dudes hyped up, but still, like, nobody went over there, gave him a pat on the back or anything like that.
It did look like the water boy, you know, like slap hands. No, you have no friends here, water boy, Jim Boylan.
So I guess my question is, where does this go a month from now? If this is still the same thing where we're seeing Bulls are still struggling to close out fourth quarters, Zach is having to win games by himself, or Kobe White's having to win games by himself. We have no clue what's going on with Otto Porter. He's not back. Ari Markkanen still is in the garbage. And your team is, say the Bulls are 7 or 8 games under 500 when we get to right around the new year. I mean, what do you do at that point? We're playing in limbo again. It's like, well, we play in limbo with the rebuild and have no idea what the direction is in these first 3 years and what we're doing. And then now each individual season, we get a taste of, hey, you know, we're not bad enough to tank completely, and we have good enough players not to do that. But at the same time, our record doesn't reflect that, and we're at a point where we need to make some decisions, and the front office is going to have to make some decisions too. So I don't know. It's frustrating, even after a win, a great win in Charlotte, and a great performance and an awesome shot by Zach. We still have to talk about all the negatives, and it's important to do that because of the response that Jim Boylan gave to Levine for not, in his terms, seems like he did not give enough effort. That's what Boylan thinks, and then turns around, has an incredible game, career night game, and that still was almost not enough. I don't know, where do we go in a month if it's still the same stuff? Are the Bulls going to start trading pieces off and say, you know what, we're extending the timeline of this rebuild, we're not as close as we thought we were, and we're going to start to trade guys, whether it be Levine, whether it be Thaddeus Young and Satoransky, or whoever, to get value? Or do they continue to just stick through this and say, you know what, this is the team that we assembled. If it's not going to play out, we're just going to at least watch it, see if this plays out. What do you think?
I mean, it is tricky, and you know, I'll preface this by reminding everyone, and it's something that some of the optimists that still exist out there are pointing to, despite being 5 games under 500, 6-11, with one of the easiest schedules across the league out of the gate, the Bulls are currently 1 game behind the current 8th seed Orlando Magic.
That's a joke.
The Bulls are 6-11. Orlando, currently occupying the 8th seed in the East, is 6-9.
That's a joke.
And then, you know, Washington 5-9, Charlotte 6-11, Bulls 6-11, Cleveland and Detroit both 5-11, Hawks and Knicks below them with 4 wins apiece. The East is trash. And despite this, you know, gross underperformance so far, the Bulls are not actually dead in the water yet. That's how bad the East is. So this is, you know, they came out on media day and said, John Paxson said, we want to be, you know, a team that competes at a high level. When you do that, you can be a playoff, you know, caliber team. Jim Boylan came out and said it in more plain terms. He said our goal is to make the playoffs. So that goal is still possible. And I think it was our buddy Tony Gill who asked him after a recent loss, like, do you change your goals now? After that loss dropped him to whatever their record was at the time, and it started to look like the season's, you know, slipping away. And Jim said, no, I don't change my goals. That's still our goal. We want to work towards being a team that can, you know, get a playoff spot. So that's actually still possible. It's not even December yet. There is a lot of basketball left to play. But I don't, based on what I've seen and what you were just talking about, you know, with what it takes for this team to get a win, it doesn't, like you said, it doesn't seem sustainable. It doesn't seem like a formula for winning. So what do they do if they continue this trajectory of being a team that's, you know, losing twice as many games as they win? The more logical guess is that they trade Zach, or they trade Lowry, or they do something that does not involve firing Jim Boylan, because that saves more face. If they fire Jim Boylan, not even a full year into his first full season as being the head coach, they're admitting to everyone that they don't know how to hire coaches. saying one of the players is a problem is an easier way for them to try to save face.
I'm with you on that. And, you know, they can explain a Levine or a Markkanen or a Carter or Satoransky or a Young trade way better than they can explain firing two head coaches basically in a calendar year if they did it within the next couple of weeks. There's no explaining that. There's no explaining it whatsoever, especially not running two coaching searches over the last two times you've hired. What I don't want to happen, Matt, is all of a sudden there to be this false hope of optimism. And I say that because the Bulls now, over the next 10 games, 8 of the 10 games, they're playing teams under 500. You get Golden State twice, you get the Trailblazers twice, you get the Kings, the Grizzlies, the Heat, the Raptors, the Hawks, and the Hornets. If the Bulls go 8-2 in this stretch or 7-3, are we all of a sudden going to flip the script again and say, oh, everything's fine, we figured it out? I don't want that to happen because we're playing very, very bad teams.
I know one person who definitely will, our pal Fred. but I think you bring up a very real concern because you know who would absolutely say, oh, look, everything's fine, we're starting to pull things together? The Bulls front office and their dumbass coach, Jim Boylan, who are all, you know, they're not actually on hot seats because, you know, there is no accountability from the Reinsdorfs whatsoever. We all know that. That's nothing new. But, I mean, absolutely, you can see them saying, oh, look, like we're turning things around. No. Beating bad teams, all that does is probably screw the Bulls over come lottery draft night, just like it did last season when you went 15-20 against teams with bad records that ended up ahead of you in the lottery. And all the good teams, you got blown out by. And that, like, to me, that's as simple as you can make it. The schedule is so easy. There are losing games to winnable opponents. And anytime they play a decent team, look at Toronto early in the season. Look at Houston. Even without Kyrie, look at Brooklyn. Look at Milwaukee both times. Look at most recently, who did they just play that they got blown? Oh, Miami. When they play a good team, it's not close. I think that says a lot.
And you know what, too, is you bring up the perfect point is, yeah, this would buy the front office some time, especially if they flipped it around and it was they go 7-3 over the next 10 games and say, oh, no, everything's all right now. You know, we're figuring it out now and we're close to 500 at this point and it's the middle of the season. We're going to get Otto back. We're finally turning the page and I think we're figuring it out if they go 7-3 or 8-2 or whatever, or even 5-5 through this stretch. I want to see the Bulls win games. Like you just said, they were beating teams they shouldn't have beat last year. It only hurt their draft stock. This year, we want to beat those teams. We can't beat those teams. So it's inferior. It's infuriating because this year, I want them to win those games and they don't. And they find unbelievable ways to blow it in the fourth quarter. But I'm just looking at their schedule. Like even going out past the 15-game marker, the next 15 games, Matt, the Bulls play 13 teams. A lot of them are double ups, but 13 teams out of those 15 games are teams under 500 and like teams that are not like hanging around by one or two games. Like we're talking about like a 5-11 Thunder team and a 5-12 Portland Trailblazers team and the worst team in basketball right now and the Warriors you play twice. So this is a stretch where if the Bulls are going to go on a run here over the next 15 games, I want it to be for real. Zach LaVine, show me consistency over the next 15 games. Lowry Marketed, pull your head out of your ass. Either Jim Boylan, sit his ass down and let him sit for the next 2 or 3 weeks while you have an easier load on the schedule, or get your head out of your ass and figure it out. I don't care what it is, but it needs to be figured out now. I don't want no false hope over the next 15 games where we see Zach LaVine scoring 55 in a game and we're winning by 3, or Kobe White has to come off the bench and score 40. That does nothing for me. I need to see more consistency across the board from everyone. Really, the only person that I've seen consistently give a shit every game and every opportunity is in that game is Shaq Harrison, Ryan Arcidiacono. Both of those guys are giving effort. They're out there for a reason. And obviously Jim Boylan's picking those guys to play crucial minutes because they're actually giving a damn. So I don't know. It needs to be better across the board from every single person. Maybe not Carter. Carter's played really good too. But I don't want no false hope here over these next 15 games. And That's plain and simple.
I mean, like, that should theoretically be the stepping stone, like you were kind of just saying, you know, like the teams that the Bulls have lost to already are teams that, as a team trying to go from the basement to being a mediocre team that can maybe vie for, you know, one of the lower playoff spots, you are supposed to beat the bad teams. There should be teams across this league that talent-wise on paper are worse than the Bulls. Now we're learning that maybe that number of teams whose talent on paper is worse than the Bulls is not as big of a number of teams as we hoped. But even still, that's how you make the next step in a rebuild. You go from being one of the bad teams that gets beat by everybody to being one of the teams that can at least regularly, with your best players and your execution and your system, beat the bad teams. And we are seeing more of the same this season compared to last season, where the only teams that the Bulls are capable of beating are the bad ones, and they can't even beat the bad ones all the time.
Where do you draw the line over the next 15 games? So the Bulls are 6-11 right now. And I keep forgetting about this, too, and it pisses me off again that the East is so shitty that even if the Bulls pull out a 500 record over the next 15 games, not 500, but 7-8 or 8-7, or even 6-9 or whatever it is, they're still going to have a chance because the East is just so garbage this year, and it's just going to prolong their decision on what they're going to do for this season. Where do you put the marker at? Is like, have to hit the panic button over these 15 games? Is it 5-10 if the Bulls go over that over the next 15 games, or is it closer to maybe 500, or do they have to just be a complete and total disaster for you to really hit the panic button and say, you know what, maybe we should reevaluate what we're doing this entire season? Maybe it isn't playoffs, and maybe it isn't being competitive, and maybe it's about developing and figuring out what you have and still collecting assets. What do you overall think over these next, over the next month or so?
Well, I mean, it depends on what you think the actions are that follow the quote-unquote hitting of the panic button. Because if you're talking about maybe shaking things up and making a trade and trading away one of the key pieces that you were trying to say is cornerstone of our rebuild, a.k.a. Zach or Lowry or Wendell or something like that. Although, you know, I don't know why they would look to trade Wendell given what he's shown you so far this season, but probably Zach or Lowry. Those are the two that it's like, panic, things aren't working, trade somebody. Change up the personnel. To me, that is foolish. That is hasty. And it goes because of all of, you know, the things we were talking about with Lowry earlier, and that, you know, there could be lots of factors here. And the fact that we know that Zach probably isn't a 1A on a good team. And right now the Bulls are trying to make him a, you know, face of the franchise, star caliber player that maybe he is not good enough to be. And that maybe he's best suited to be a complementary piece on a good team. That doesn't mean you necessarily have to trade him, because you can still maybe down the road find the guy who is the best player, the superstar that every team needs to be good and going deep in playoff runs. To me, all of that is a moot point until you get the fuck rid of Jim Boylan and see what Lowry and Zach and this team can do with a coach who knows what the hell he's doing. It is, to me, a foolish, panicky decision to trade Zach or Lowry right now while Jim Boylan is this team's coach.
Let's play this out.
I think there is a real reason you're seeing regression, not progress, and I think it points to the head coach's chair.
Let's play this out for a second. One of our podcast network brethren reached out to me from the Locked On Heat, and this weekend there's been a lot of chatter, I guess, amongst Heat Twitter and fans of the Miami Heat talking about adding another piece because of the hot start the Heat have gotten off to. And the one thing that they were thinking about is Zach LaVine. And he asked me my opinions on what this team is doing with LaVine, if they're listening quietly behind closed doors, because right now publicly they're clearly not trading him, but obviously always listening. And what I told him, the first thing that I told him was publicly they're not listening, but you know how the Bulls roll. They tell the guys one thing and it could be the other. And I just told him, see the Portis trade just from last year. They told him they wouldn't trade him unless it was for Kevin Durant, and they turned around and dealt him 48 hours later. So I said it's always on the table, but I want to get your thoughts.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did we say Kevin Durant? We meant Kevin Durant and Otto Porter.
Yeah. We meant Kevin Durant's less talented, more expensive cousin, Otto Porter Jr. I want to get your thought. Okay, so let's put in the mindset that the Heat ring the Bulls and you're the front office, and think in terms of the way they think and how they value Zach. What do you think the starting package is to trade LaVine to the Heat? What would you ask for right off the bat?
Oh, man. I mean, in a realistic world, and, you know, talking about matching salaries and all that, I don't know who the Heat would be willing to give up. I mean, I think that they would let Goran Dragic go because he's kind of, you know, he's the previous generation. He's old. He doesn't really fit into this new young core. But I don't want a 33-year-old Goran Dragic. I don't think that really fixes anything for this Bulls roster. You know, he's on a 19.2 mil contract, so clearly that would get you pretty close to, you know, to actually beyond what Zach's is, or like actually right around there. Isn't Zach making 19 this year?
Yeah, 19 yeah, and a half.
So like almost identical. But I mean, like, I don't want that. Trading away a 24-year-old who still has star potential for a 33-year-old who's just kind of a meh point guard. Maybe some Bulls fans there are saying, but you know, if you get yourself a real point guard, then maybe, and you keep Lowry, then you actually see what Lowry can do. I mean, that's a fair point. But as far as the other young talent on this Heat team, like the guys that we've seen, like, you know, Tyler Hero, Kendrick Nunn, you know, the Simeon product, these guys who are performing really well, even like the nobody Duncan Robinson, who came out of nowhere and had that amazing, you know, lights out shooting performance just a few nights ago. If I'm Miami, I'm saying, do we want to sacrifice any of these potential stars, you know, let alone a guy like Justice Winslow, to get Zach LaVine? I don't know if Miami does that. I don't see if Miami feels that
just
neat.
Just a side note before I kind of tell you what I thought as far as value. I think Zach LaVine would play really well alongside a guy like Jimmy Butler. They could fill in, close the gap on defense, that's for sure. I think just Miami makes a lot of sense for LaVine if the Bulls do deal him, just because of the pieces and the way that they run down there. And Eric Spoelstra, too, is one of the best head coaches in the NBA. So if there's anybody that they can get Zach LaVine to buy in to play a little bit more on the one side of the ball, buy into a system, it would be him. But I thought about in terms of the way that the Bulls think, and they overvalue their guys completely, always. And Zach LaVine, it's no different. The way that we were talking last year, remember when we were talking about potential deals, if they were going to trade Zach LaVine, what would it cost you? We started with guys like DeMar DeRozan, and like borderline all-stars are guys that have been all-stars already, established players. I said, you know, if the Bulls are going to trade him, this means to me that we are extending the rebuild and we are still in asset collection mode. And what we're doing here is trying to get some young players, maybe retain another pick. And at the same time, maybe you can eat some money from Miami. So originally I said, I have to have Tyler Hero or Bam Adebayo. It has to start with one of those guys. And then we build from there. Goran Dragic makes sense just because of the money, but he's a free agent at the end of the year. So for the Bulls, that wouldn't be that bad, but who are you spending your money on in 2020? Like, there's nobody out there of significance that the Bulls are going to want to spend on.
Free agent class is pretty weak.
And for the Heat to trade away Dragic makes no sense if they're trying to win now, or if they're trying to be competitive now. It would only weaken their team. So what I thought maybe was Tyler Hero, Dion Waiters, and Justice Winslow for Zach LaVine and Denzel Valentine. This gets, I know Justice Winslow is a key piece of that Heat team, but still, he's only 23, would be a good asset for the Bulls to get back. LaVine's on a contract still has 2 years left on his deal. Him and Jimmy Butler together, you don't have to give up Dragic. You still free up that money there. We take on Waiters $12 million for this year and $12.5 million for next year. And in turn, we get Winslow, we get Hero. And also, too, you deal away Denzel Valentine, who's been a nobody for this team, and maybe he can figure it out on the bench for them. Kind of replaces Hero's spot as far as bench depth and scoring. They thought that that was intriguing as well. They don't know if the Heat would give up Winslow, though.
That's the part that I don't see happening. You know, take the Bulls taking on Waiters gets you closer, I think, because, you know, I think that that's money that the Heat would like to get rid of. But I don't think the Heat say yes to that deal. To get Valentine and LaVine for Justice Winslow and Tyler Hero, I think the Heat say no. Honestly, you know, there's recency bias right now.
Oh,
like Magic Johnson.
This is the first time he's like, turned the NBA on?
Player of the year, Zach LaVine. Probably because he's watched one one quarter of one game this season. But, I mean, Bulls fans want to believe that Zach has this amazing trade value, and he does have a very tradable contract. That part is true. And he is a guy who can go be a solid second or third scorer on a real team that's contending. But I still don't think that Miami would see him as a piece that they so need that they're okay with it costing them two young players, two young talents that they're still developing, like Winslow and
yeah. So I thought about that, like over evaluation was getting those three pieces back for the two pieces we send to Miami. I mean, you could turn around. Miami doesn't have a whole lot of first round picks either. They traded a lot of those away when they were making deals. So that route would be a little bit more difficult. But as far as money and matchup, that would make a decent amount of sense. Bulls would probably have to send something else back too if they did that, just because of Waiters and Winslow's money. Plus you throw in Hero's money too. But that would ultimately be what I would want if the Bulls are going to make that deal and all of a sudden it's a complete disaster and we're blowing things up and Levine's getting dealt and we're sidestepping this rebuild and we're extending it, is get a young guy back. You'd really get two young guys back, and Winslow's only 23, and the Waiters, you can eat that money. Who cares about that? Because you're not going to spend till at least 2021. That'll be off the books. That would be the route that I want the Bulls to go, and not just swap talent for talent, Zach LaVine for somebody that's around that same level, and we just try it from there. That would do nothing for me.
Yeah, I think I see your point there. I'm probably with you. But I mean, this begs the most important question. If they trade Zach, if they trade, you know, in this hypothetical, and again, I personally think it's too early to panic trade somebody, including Zach. But does that count as a full new rebuild, quote unquote? Because, you know, John Paxson has serious issues with people misdefining or misnumbering the number of quote unquote rebuilds that he's been allowed to orchestrate since taking over this team in 2003. That's the real question. It's not four. It's like three, maybe even two. All right, John. Really looking forward to your Christmas morning interview.
They understand better than anybody, so just so you know that. But yeah, I just want to kind of throw that out there to you. Just, I was curious kind of what your thought was on that, and I think we're around the same ballpark. Ultimately, I would say the Heat would have to overspend, and like they really want to go for it. I feel like this team is good enough to be that over the next couple of years. Then that would be what they would have to spend to get LaVine, not only being, like you said, not only to talk about his game, but just the contract he's on too, just makes him even more valuable. So I think the last thing I wanted to finish up on, just real quick, because we were talking about LaVine, I was looking through fourth quarter stats, and obviously the game on Saturday really, really helped Zach LaVine's fourth quarter stats out. But Zach LaVine, he is top five in the league right now in points in the fourth quarter. He ranks fourth. It's Harden 1 at 163, Lillard at 144. Giannis at 136, Zach LaVine and LeBron James both have 110. Out of those top five guys, though, Zach LaVine's leading in three-point percentage in the fourth quarter. He's shooting 47.4% from three. Like, again, I said, though, Charlotte game helped him a ton with the three-point percentage.
Right. He shot like 75% from downtown in that game
But
alone.
Still, it's a good sample size here. He was 18 for 38 from three in the fourth quarter, so 47.4%. And you know, to the credits of the Bulls, too, I actually thought they were a lot worse on offense in the fourth quarter than I was giving them credit for. They're actually a lot better than I thought. It's been the defense that's been non-existent. Because a lot of those guys, if you go through the three-point percentage, you go through their field goal percentage, the points, a lot of the guys that we've been asking to step up outside of Lowry and Carter have been doing that, and they've been shooting pretty well. So it's about being able to play on both sides of the ball for the Bulls in the fourth quarter. But I wanted to give Zach LaVine at least a little bit of his props because he played an unbelievable Saturday, and he's among those talks when we're talking about closing out games. He needs somebody else to fucking help him, please.
Yes. And look, again, I agree. I think we have to give Zach a substantial amount of credit for that game. Not many people in the league can do what he just did on Saturday night, between, you know, the three pointers and dropping 49. I do also think that this is, you know, there is a lot of story left to be told about whether Zach LaVine can actually be the guy for a good team. I still have my doubts about that. And some of it has to do with his you know, his defensive liability and being really just a one-way player. Some people call him an empty calories, you know, point scorer, pick your phrase. But the other issue to me, it's nice to see that Zach has, you know, one of the better field goal percentages, three-point percentages among guys taking a lot of fourth-quarter shots. That's a good thing. But I would also be curious to know about where Zach ranks in, like, fourth-quarter turnovers, right? Fourth-quarter, like, missed bunnies at the rim. Because those are the things that frustrate the Zach LaVine doubters, I think, the most. It's like, yeah, he plays bad defense. A lot of elite scorers in this league play bad defense. Some of them get called out for it. Some of them don't. But right now, it's like Zach has shown time and again that one of his weaknesses right now is not being a guy who can make the right basketball decision down the stretch and be the, you know, the reason for uncostly, unforced turnovers down the stretch. And when you're losing a lot of close games, that draws a lot of attention.
Yeah, your three major ball handlers on this team in the fourth quarter especially have the three highest turnovers totals among the Bulls. Zach LaVine has 11 in the fourth quarter this year. Satoransky and Markkanen both have 7. Everybody else has 6 or under. So the three guys that you're asking to take care of the ball have the most turnovers, which tends to happen, but still. I would be curious to know that too. And maybe it's more going into depth about looking into clutch stats as far as, you know, within 5 points, under 5 minutes, how is Zach taking care of the ball? What's his shooting percentages there? And that's something that I'm going to take a look at and we'll talk about later in this week, as well as a couple of other things too, just to kind of wrap up the first 6 weeks of the season and where we go from here. But it starts tonight. It starts tonight over the next 15 games. The Bulls need to show consistency and it's going to define their season. These next 15 games are going to define the Bulls season. They go 5-10, 6-9. The team looks like we're not going to be competitive this year. That's the way that this team's going to play. But if they turn it around, go, you know, and go 2, 3, 4 games over 500 and actually look good, I will be very, very excited about this team going into 2020. But if I don't see that over the next 15 games, we could probably call it a wrap and start talking about how the rest of the season's going to go and how they're going to structure it and also how they're going to spin it. So it starts tonight, though. Yeah, that's for sure.
Start looking at that 2020 draft class. Don't bother looking at available coaches elsewhere, because if there's one thing that I think won't change, you know, people are saying, hey, don't the Bulls love to fire their coaches like right leading up to the holiday season, right around Christmas? Something, you know, they fired Fred December, they did the same thing to Vinny, Skiles. But it's like, like, you know, we covered it, but this team this front office can't fire Jim right now. They're not going to fire Jim right now. Bulls fans hoping that they're going to get their wish and Jim's going to be fired by Christmas.
I'm with you.
I don't see it.
Real quick, too, just because I didn't hit on it. Very disappointed by the Bulls City Edition jerseys. I know I heard your take on it, too, but very, very, very disappointed on them.
Oh, gross. They're bad. I mean, there are plenty of bad City Edition jerseys across the league, and I, you know, it's hard for the Bulls to follow up because I think they did really well with their first two, and you know, I think I like the statements, you know, the black with the subtle pinstripes. I wish the pinstripes were a little more pronounced, even if they didn't go red, just make them a little more pronounced. But you know, with all these different, gotta have this jersey, the statement jersey, the City Edition jersey, it's like, you're not going to knock all of them out of the park. But yeah, the new one that's just blue is just ugly. But my favorite part was the Bulls Twitter account not even knowing that that was not, in fact, their first jersey with the Bulls logo on the front.
I saw that. Yeah, they had those trash-ass Christmas jerseys, right? Like back in like 2011?
2013.
Yeah, those were god-awful. Oh yeah, they had weren't those gray with red? The Bulls had the big-ass logo on the front. They also had the red ones, too, with like a gray weird-ass logo. Yes.
And they had sleeves. Yep.
RIP the sleeve jerseys. I liked those jerseys, but I digress. I'm probably the only one out there that liked the sleeve jerseys, but I was disappointed. Big-ass logo on the front is not doing it for me, but I like the colors, and I like the scheme and everything else about the jersey. Just the big-ass logo is not. It doesn't do it for me.
And like my guy Big Dave on Outsiders brought up the good point, and I totally agree with him. If you take that design and that color scheme and put it on like a hoodie, I would wear the shit out of that hoodie. but as a jersey, it looks dumb.
They should have taken the script that they had from the first City Edition jerseys they had in the first year of the rebuild and slapped it on these jerseys. That would have made it look 1,000 times better. That Chicago script, that would have looked beautiful. But
yeah.
Yeah, like you said, can't win them all.
Kind of like the Miami Vice ones.
Yes, I like those. I like those a lot, too. But yeah, good jerseys coming out. And at least they have the statement ones, and they'll wear those more often than they will wear the City Edition ones. But can't knock them all out of the ballpark. And like you said, they had good ones last year and the last 2 years. So I will give them a little bit of credit there. But I think that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Feels like an old episode. We're hanging around right around an hour. Hope you guys enjoyed the episode. We will be back tomorrow with a fresh one. Hope you enjoy the Trailblazers and Bulls tonight. Let's hope there isn't some type of madness going on. This Trailblazers team's not very good. And Carmelo Anthony, former Bull, is making his return tonight, too. If you want to check out the leaked tribute video, I have posted it on my Twitter for you guys to see that the Bulls will be probably not airing tonight. But nonetheless, hit us up on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. 331-979-1369, the place to drop your texts, your voicemails. We're doing mailbag this week before Thanksgiving, so make sure you get your voicemails in, your text messages. You want to text us while you're watching the game tonight. We would love to hear from you. So 331-979-1369, the place to do that. Need to thank our sponsor for today's show in Audible. Audible has the world's largest selection of audiobooks and audio entertainment. Start listening with 30-day free trial of Audible right now. Choose one audiobook and two Audible originals and absolutely free. Visit audible.com/lockedonNBA. Listening on the go. If you can't visit Audible right now, you can find this and all other offers from the Locked On Podcast Network at Locked On Sponsors, lockedonpodcast.com/offers. That's lockedonpodcast.com/offers. So thanks to Audible for sponsoring the show today. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. Enjoy the game tonight. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Hey, Ryan Archidiaco. Giacomo, Ryan Archie Giacomo, Ryan Archie Giacomo, Ryan Archie Giacomo.
Holding and looking, Rozier inside, and then Devontae Graham lost the ball. Levine, turnaround jumper up, get it! 8/10 of a second, Zach Levine on the right wing, three off his Charlotte, turnover, down the floor, intercepted by the Bulls, and the ball game is over, the Bulls win 116-115. I don't believe what I just saw.
I mean, let's just be honest, okay? He saved their ass, and they won the game.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com